We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everyone, before we get into today's pod, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle's the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and e-learning courses full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part? It's only $15, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle's an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance in the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Happy New Year to all of our listeners and to you too, Jack. How are we doing?
Yeah, Happy New Year to everyone listening at home and to all your families. But not a Happy New Year if your name is Steve Nash.
Ooh, coming for the heat early on, Jack. Obviously, Nets lost tonight to Atlanta 114-96. We're going to jump into that. But as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including otgbasketball.com, netspublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. And it kind of felt like the Nets had a hangover in tonight's game, Jack. Obviously, getting essentially blown out by the Hawks, who were in control of this game from the start.
Yeah, I had a pretty poor hangover as well after New Year's Eve, but I didn't have to play an NBA basketball game. Look, the Nets just weren't on. They weren't engaged. The shots weren't falling. It was sloppy on both ends of the floor. There was a lack of engagement. There was a lack of adjustments from the coaching staff, a lack of adjustments from the players out there. And you know, I said this on Twitter. You're not going to win basketball games unless you have more than one player playing well. And yeah, you know, KD was the only capable basketball tonight. You know, Joe Harris chipped in a little bit here and there. Jared Allen was okay-ish, but other than that, it was a poor performance all around.
Yeah, like you said, just from the start, it was very sloppy, just not very high energy. And then the fact that the three-point ball wasn't falling tonight, especially in a night where you're already kind of lackadaisical, it's just like, all right, it's going to be a tough win. And then Kyrie Irving started off really slow. Like you mentioned, KD played well, but it was just like very blah across the board. And it was almost like we knew what the Nets were going to do. Like they pretty much did exactly what they did in the last game in terms of like lineups and rotations and stuff like that, maybe some small minor adjustments. And it was like Atlanta started switching things up and knowing where they could attack the Nets. And also I felt like Atlanta did such a better job in playing off of each other, where the Nets were so like ISO ball centric or just so dependent on one or two players, where Atlanta had a lot of sets that included all five players or multiple guys touching the ball. And you just, so many possessions from the Nets were like early mid-range shots or like long contested threes.
Yeah, all the starters for the Atlanta Hawks had 10 points or more. And then you had Herter off the bench as well with 10 points. You know, TLC with 2 points, DeAndre Jordan with 8 points. You know, it was basically Joe Harris chipping in with 12, Kyrie an inefficient 18, and KD with a relatively efficient 28. You know, there was no cohesion, and I don't think a lot of it was the Hawks' like defense. I thought that, you know, they were much better defensively than the Nets were. And, you know, these two teams are going to have similar sort of question marks on that end of the floor. But it just seemed that, you know, guys like DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, you know, that sort of motivation for them was there. There was maybe one good defensive play, or a couple of good defensive plays tonight from, you know, maybe one or two from Jared Allen and that steal from Caris LeVert. But, you know, overall, his defense tonight was really poor. The communication was just not there. The switching and everything, you know, it was, hopefully it is correctable. I think that I've mentioned this before, that there is a system. And I think that at least, you know, and what you need to do to execute that system, you know, there's a knowledge there, but it just ain't happening yet. And, you know, obviously we're six games in and we've seen it in spurts. You know, we saw it against one of the best teams in the NBA, you know, form-wise in the Boston Celtics. But, you know, to have this against the Atlanta Hawks, who are probably going to give a lot of teams, you know, trouble on the offensive end. They are insane, their depth and their ability to hit shots. And they got the ball fizzing. And I think the stat that sticks out in terms of offense, Nick, obviously, we can go to the shooting numbers a little bit, but the Nets only had 19 assists on 35 made field goals. And I think that the ball was just far too stagnant and they took far too long to get into sets.
Yeah, just not a lot of energy on that end of the floor. Just a lot of possessions going down and not passing the ball to your teammate and you just taking a shot. And a lot of that was Kyrie Irving. And and obviously, he's one of the best offensive players in the game, so you're going to live with a lot of his bad shots. But I just felt like at times, as the point guard, you have to get other players involved. You know what I mean? And I feel like maybe that's a spot where they miss Spencer Dinwiddie a little bit. Like
Big
you said,
time.
Only six games, but still, like, that offensive cohesion wasn't great, and then defensive cohesion was really bad. So I just felt like from the start, the chemistry and rhythm just wasn't in a good place, and that's really hard to fix unless your second unit comes in and plays really well, which they did against the previous game in Atlanta, but that wasn't the case tonight. And credit to Atlanta's second unit, I thought they played a lot better in this game.
Look, their depth is great, and they've got a lot of injuries as well. So, you know, kudos to them. I think they're going to be a pretty good team this season. But one thing that we saw, you know, in the last game was the staggering. But when the staggering does come, it just allows Kyrie or KD, and Kyrie stayed out there with the second unit initially, and he just continued putting out poor shots.
Yeah.
And you know, 6-21 from the field, 18 points. Was really good on the boards, like showed really good energy there, did have a couple of steals and four assists, but you know, he's not a pure point guard. He's not Rajon Rondo, he's not even Spencer Dinwiddie in that sort of regard either. You know, he's looking more for his own than he's looking for others in a lot of respects. You know, there was the nice little dump off pass to TLC, which I thought was more opportune than really sort of high level of skill.
Yeah, he lost the dribble and it was just kind of like
and then TLC made a nice cut for his only points of the night, funnily enough. So, look, I think Kyrie needs to have better game awareness. And, look, this is a one-game performance, and I don't expect this to be, you know, I don't expect this to be a trend. But, you know, we saw him bounce back in the second half last game. Unfortunately, he couldn't do that today. You know, his just offensive rhythm wasn't there. It wasn't there, and he couldn't find it. And, you know, he had blinders on a little bit. He was trying to get himself going rather than being like, all right. And look, there was times where, you know, those boards I thought and some of his defense was good, but he still had, you know, all right, this is my shot. I need to, you know, get into my spot here. Need to get it off the glass here. Need to take this pull up. And it's
too
just
too many
like,
times he came down the floor, like you're saying, Jack, and was like, hey, I'm going to score instead of reading the defense.
Yeah. 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 And look, and he did that all in the fourth quarter, and you know he did it in a sense where it was like, oh, seven shots made in that quarter. It was incredible. But at this point in time, when you have Kevin Durant, who is Kevin freaking Durant, and look, I also like that both KD, Kyrie, and everyone out there on the floor had the confidence to kick it out to TLC. You know, he took five threes and he missed all of them. But they still were like, you know what, you're in with us now. We're going to give you these shots. But it wasn't good. It wasn't a good offensive night. You know, the three-point shooting, I think, is correctable. I don't know how often the Nets are going to go 7 of 37, 18.9% from the three-point
line.
Their
worst shooting game of the season from three, to be honest.
It probably is. Look, Kyrie Irving, 2 of 11. Kevin Durant, 2 of 7. Joe Harris, 2 of 5, 0 of 5 for TLC, 0 of 3 for Caris LeVert, 0 of 2 for Landry Shamet, and a couple of guys, you know, missed one a piece. So I think a lot of it was Kyrie. Like, you don't take 11 shots from 3, my guy, if they're just not falling. And, you know,
and especially if some of them are bad shots and early in the shot clock. Like, sometimes you're going to be forced to take threes that you don't necessarily want to take, but I would say, what would you say, Jack? Seven of those were probably shots that he probably shouldn't have taken?
Yeah, I would say at least half of them. Yeah, six or more. That was just unnecessary. And And he can get to so many other spots on the floor. He had 21 shots tonight, and half of them are from three. Yeah, that's like good analytically thrown, Lee, but the types of threes he was taking were just like, look, all right, you hit some of these 35-footers and daggers the last game. It's not working for you tonight. I just thought that his awareness wasn't amazing tonight. And look, it's not to say that that is going to continue, like I said, but this one-game performance, we analyze one-game performances on this podcast, and, you know, we have to remain a level of objectivity. It wasn't a good game from Kyrie tonight. And, you know, I think the early, the start of the game and sort of setting the tone, he was a part of the reason why the Nets couldn't get out of that funk, because he kept trying to look for his own a little bit too much rather than trying to go, all right, let's move this ball a little bit rather than dribble, dribble, dribble or slow sets. I thought that there was just too much of that.
Yeah, and then, like, he does have some good defensive plays, but then on the other end of the floor, he's going to get caught on so many screens, and then he's going to give up buckets that it's just going to be hard for you to make up for such a bad shooting performance. You know what I mean? Like, he's not like a big net negative defensively, but it's definitely an area where I felt like Atlanta attacked at different points, especially like DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish. They felt pretty confident shooting over him just because he's not that big of a player. So that definitely hurt. And honestly, like when you mentioned like TLC, we love him and what he did in, you know, in spurts and what he did in the bubble. It just hurts when you have a player out there and they can't hit a shot. Like, that's just being that black hole on offense that just doesn't do anything, where it's just like the other team is kind of hoping you shoot. And I'm not saying TLC is in trouble for the entire season, but it definitely hurts and it could be hard for him to get out of this slump.
His tenure as a Brooklyn Net is bipolar. He's either, you know, Stephen Curry or he's Tony Allen. You know, there's no in between where it's like, you know, Joe Harris shooting 2 of 5, which is like what you want. You want steadiness and consistency from your starters. And unfortunately, TLC doesn't provide that, at least at this early point in time. Not to say that, you know, after a 2-game sample size, he can't get out of that funk and work his way into some good habits. But at this early sort of stage, it's just like, all right, man, you're going to hit these threes or you're going to make these passes or you, basically you just have to make those threes. It's pretty simple. And there was one shot where he took like an ISO pull up from mid-range. And I'm just like,
early in the shot clock too.
You're not Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I mean, he shouldn't be taking mid-range shots, especially if like KD and Kyrie are on the floor, unless it's like 3 seconds of the shot clock type of thing. And I just feel like for TLC too is like, if you're not going to hit your shots, because there's, you know, some point you can't control that, like you're going to have bad shooting nights, but I feel like you need to try to find other areas to have an impact. And I didn't think his defense was bad this game or anything like that, but you want maybe him to spark a couple turnovers or a few of those big hustle plays, because that's also what I felt like the Nets lacked tonight, was just like those, that energy stuff. Like, yeah, like some games you're just going to feel bad and you're going to feel like shit and not be able to perform. But then sometimes that coach has like that one player they can put in the game that can give the starting unit a boost or give the bench unit a boost or whatever it might be. And like being the fifth starter, you're kind of the energy guy, given that your skill level is so much lower than the other four players you're playing with. And I'm not trying to take a shot at TLC, but that's like his role. Like, you need him to find a way to kind of bring a spark sometimes.
Yeah, his defense isn't good enough to make up for his lack of offense. You know, he's not a genuine defensive stopper. He's not Marcus Smart, Patrick Beverley, Tony Allen, these sort of dudes, Draymond Green. He's not elite all-defensive caliber player. He's good enough, and he gives you, you know, he's got a decent size about him. He's a good athlete. But, you know, another guy on the roster who I think Nets Twitter is craving for, you know, Bruce Brown, I think can provide everything that TLC did tonight, if not more, because I think he provides, like you mentioned, and like he's mentioned in the offseason, a little bit of playmaking. We did see him out there in junk time. I think he's a better defender. I posted a highlight video of him defending on James Harden. So I really don't know what it is that he's done to Steve Nash. Did he like run over his dog or something? Like, it makes no sense why Bruce Brown isn't getting minutes. And the rotations from Steve Nash as well weren't really creative or experimental. It's just like, all right, let's just do the same thing again. All right, let's just try this one again. It's just like, all right, there has to be some level of experimentation here. Like, you're not doing the same thing again and again and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. And he was insane tonight with some of his rotations, lack of rotations, Kenny Atkinson lack of not calling timeouts. It wasn't the best.
His just lack of coaching impact. You know what I mean? It's like almost like he doesn't want to put his fingerprints on the game and wants to let the players do their thing. But I feel like, especially early in the season, he needs to step in and say certain things like, hey, Kyrie, you know, make sure we get Joe Harris a couple more shots or whatever it might be. Or, you know, get DeAndre oop or like you know, give Jared Allen some touches, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, as the point guard, and then him coming in, like you said, with the rotations. We did see KD at center, I think, for like a few minutes in this game. But like, switch up some of the stuff with like Landry Shamet too. Like, you played this team before. You have that sample size from the previous matchup, so you know the adjustments that you can make already. Where I get it going to a new game and facing a team for the first time, you might want to stick with your normal stuff. But given you already played this team, you kind of have a better idea what to expect. And we didn't really see much of that stuff from Steve Nash tonight.
Alex Schiffer as well, Nick, and I want to get your response to this. I'm not calling timeouts early. Nash said he wanted the Nets to try and problem solve for themselves, wanted to give the team time to figure it out. That's the cop-out answer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just kind of like the real player coach, and that's kind of him being a player and what maybe he would want it to do. And I feel like this is also an area where player coaches struggle, like we're actually former players being head coaches, because Steve Nash might have wanted that for himself personally because of the way that he played in his mindset. But KD and Kyrie maybe could use a timeout in that situation because they're not the same level of like point guard, you know, offensive initiators like he was for his team in terms of like setting everything up. You know what I mean? Like, KD and Kyrie are obviously just as talented offensively, but I'm saying like in terms of being the point guard, that floor general, like he could fix things on the run, where maybe it would be beneficial, especially for a brand new team. Like, I feel like that's the issue because the team is so new and some of the issues were so bad.
Yeah. There's a point in time where you're not just the coach of vibes anymore. You got to actually do something as an NBA head coach. And we've given him credit on previous performances, including, you know, the other game against the Atlanta Hawks. But, you know, he could have changed things somewhat, or at least tried to change things. You know,
that's what I would like to see. I don't like, yeah, you're never going to be perfect in what your changes are, but at least if you're trying to change something, at least we know that there's some effort or some creativity there. But when you're, like you said, Jack, it's insanity doing the same thing over and over.
It's, and look, you know, the best, one of the best coaches in the history of the game, you know, Greg Popovich, calls the timeout after like 40 seconds if he doesn't like what's happening. And you know, we see a lot of, you know, influences from the Spurs model and the Spurs system. Show that it's just like, you know what, that's not good enough. And we saw that against the Boston Celtics, but it was because Spencer Dinwiddie was injured. But a lot of people were like, oh, this is really good for Steve Nash. He's not good enough consistency. The offense isn't there. Like, why not do that in the first quarter, you know, when the offense just isn't there? All right, let's reset here. All right, let's drop some sets from Joe for Joe Harris or Kevin Durant here, or a pick and roll for DJ, or whatever the hell it is. It just felt like that there was just not enough to being done by a head coach. It's sort of just being like, look, player empowerment is awesome. You know, these guys are good enough to be able to figure it out, but you also need to give them the tools to be able to figure it out. And if you're not going to stop the bleeding, then they're going to keep bleeding.
Yeah, especially with some of the defensive issues, given it's a new system for essentially everybody. I mean, obviously, some of the stuff is from last year, but like, they're looking to make changes. And you see it's clearly a defensive communication issue. Call a timeout. You know, this is what we're doing. This is what we need to do against this player. Like, give them a reminder. Obviously, things are still fresh. So, I agree, Jack. I feel like he could have done a better job. Obviously, you know, some of it is on the players too, energy-wise, communication-wise, just not being as locked in. But that's where the coach comes in, is like, hey, guys, we can play at a lot higher level. And I feel like another thing that makes this team frustrating is, like, we saw for that few-minute stretch in the fourth quarter where they, like, kind of turned it up and almost made it into a game. It's like, where's that intensity for the entire game?
Yeah, I mean, in the basketball, like anything, like any sport, you know, is above the head, a lot of it, above the shoulders, as they say. And, you know, he said to reporters as well, on the defensive issues, we're frustrated with it, but it's early and we have to work through it. And he also said that two nights ago, the Nets shot making let them overcome their defensive failings. This time around, that didn't happen. The offense has to be, there has to be some level of middle ground. There's not a middle ground. There was no good offense tonight. There was no good defense tonight. And against a team like the Atlanta Hawks, who are a good team in the Eastern Conference and a good team in the NBA, you know, you might get away with it against the Charlotte Hornets. You might get away with it against those lesser teams in the East and West. But against the Atlanta Hawks, they're going to punish you for your poor habits and the turnovers and all those different things. And the Atlanta Hawks did.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also a lot of these young teams are going to play the Nets hard. Like, they have Kevin Durant, they have Kyrie Irving, and they're considered one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. They're going to come for your head every night. And you saw that from Atlanta with some of the young guys, like you said, not being scared and, you know, playing some of their better games. Like I mentioned, DeAndre Hunter, 9 of 10 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3. Like, that's easily his best game as a pro. Like, he's a little bit locked in. And also, this is a young team that just lost to you 2 days ago. So, you know, they're going to come with extra energy. So, I just felt like the Nets maybe weren't prepared mentally in what to expect, because Atlanta looked like looked like the better team tonight. Obviously, it's one game. But I'm just saying, they came out with that more energy and effort level. Like, hey, this is serious. We're trying to win every regular season game we can.
Yeah, like effort stats and engagement stats are like rebounding. And look, they won the rebounding battle by like three. And I thought that that was fine. But there were some more important rebounds that the Atlanta Hawks got at the crucial times of getting offensive boards to sort of change the trajectory of the game. You know, the Nets go on a mini run and cut it to single digits. You know, Clint Capella or John Collins get an offensive board, kick it out for a DeAndre Hunter three or whoever else it is, or Bogdanovich. You know, the turnovers, 18 points for the Atlanta Hawks off the Brooklyn Nets, 15 turnovers to the Brooklyn Nets six.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen if that is the case. I thought that, you know, Trae Young wasn't getting a billion fouls, but it didn't necessarily matter because they were hitting every single shot from the perimeter, you know, 41% from there. So I thought that there was I'm not sure if this was a key culprit, whether it's less like good shot making versus bad defense on the perimeter. I did think, though, that the Nets went under far too often on their screens.
Yeah, they didn't respect a lot of the young guys, or they were just so confused and it was like a late closeout or a late switch or something like that. And this is kind of what we talked about a little bit with last year's defense, is by the time you allow some of these young guys to hit their shots early, their confidence is going. And then when it comes to the fourth quarter, they're just going to feel comfortable and they're going to hit stuff that maybe they don't hit. And like, the Nets also need to figure out how to defend John Collins, because like, what he's doing isn't really that crazy. It's just like he's cutting to the rim really hard every time and they don't have an answer for that.
He's a good player. He's a really, really good player. And he's a Nets killer. He murdered Jared Allen tonight. Happy New Year to Jared Allen and his family. We'll have a funeral for him a little bit later on another Brooklyn Buzz pod. But yeah, he's an awesome player. And you know, to have him, you know, and Trae Young in the same sort of team, you know, it's they've got a bevy of riches offensively. You know, there's a thing, some things to do on the defensive end of the floor. But, you know, they tried some things. You know, we saw them do a couple of like zone possessions and such.
Yeah.
And that's something that Jacques Vaughn did with the underrated, the bubble nets and such. Whereas just the Nets were like, all right, we've got our switching scheme, we've got these defensive principles, and they just didn't execute at all. Like, Caris LeVert in the first half was the old school Bambi in the headlights, like on the defensive end and on the offensive end.
2020 has reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be more efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there's no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only site that moves as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
The NBA is back in action and football is heading into the playoffs. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win the season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbooks expert.
I guess I want to ask you about Caris LeVert. You're a guy who probably watches him as intimately as anyone else. You worried about his start to the season? You know, his offense has been way off. His shot selection has been iffy. And I mean, today was probably his only poor defensive performance, to be honest. I thought he'd actually been decent enough on the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, and I thought he played better defense towards the end of the game. It was just early on that he was pretty bad, and he was just like, I don't know, his strides were off today. I think offensively, he's having a trouble finding his rhythm, it just seems like, and then also just like some of the adjustments, because I don't think his shot selection has even really been that terrible. He's just missing a lot of open shots that he usually hits. Or, you know, like he's trying to hit threes within the offense and they're not falling down. Like we talked about the last show, you know, he's just kind of a guy that takes a little bit to find his rhythm in the season. We've seen it with the injuries coming back from the finger last year, the ankle the year before that. So I'm not like super concerned, and I feel like this is just the like older person to me speaking here, because it's 6 games into the season. Like, at the end of the day, like, a lot of these issues are expected. The one thing that you can't really fix is the rebounding thing, which I get. But, like, we talked about the gang rebounding. But, like, defensive communication, like, I anticipated that being a problem. And it's not, like, something you're going to figure out in a month.
Yeah, I think for Karras, the thing that I'm worried about is that across his entire career, he's always been an inefficient when it comes to his productivity on the floor, no matter what. Like, despite his talent.
That's true. That inefficient in stretches, I would say, but like when he finds his rhythm, like he was super efficient in the bubble. He was super efficient to finish the regular season last year. And then when he got into his form in the playoffs the year before, he was really efficient. And then before he had the ankle injury, he was really efficient. I think the inefficiency is more when he doesn't know his role, when he doesn't have that specific thing set.
That's but he does have his role right now, Nick. It's a pretty consistent role, and it's probably an easier role than what Spencer did when he had to
also
adjust.
Also, 6 games. Like, you're...
I'm only saying that, you know, I think that it is worth, you know, bringing up, you know, the lack of consistency and the lack of adjustment that he's had. And also, on the sort of, like, inefficiency for him, I think that if you look at the cumulative stats across his career, he's never been like an above average true shooting or a field goal percentage player.
No, I know. But I also think we have the advantage of knowing the context of those stats.
Yeah, no, true. But I think that, you know, sometimes you look beyond the stats, and sometimes the stats are there because they're there for a reason. You know, obviously he's never had a truly healthy stretch of basketball for like 70 plus games. He's always had niggling injuries or serious injuries here or there. But look, he needs to improve, because if Kevin Durant...
I would say also, yeah, but like he needs to improve, but so does literally everybody else on the team, including Kyrie Irving and, I mean, including everybody but Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and probably Jared Allen.
No. Look, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if he wants to solidify himself as the third best player on this team, he needs to show it. And I think that, you know, he probably knows that more than any other. He knows that he's still finding his rhythm there. There were some nice plays with Karis LeVert and Jared Allen that I continue to really salivate over. But yeah, the adjustment is still happening, and it is easier for a Jared Allen who's, you know, his role is much more limited. It's just like, all right, let's play some hard defense, let's get some boards, and let's set some nice hard screens. Whereas Karis LeVert has to control everything. As a point guard, you know, for him and Kyrie at this point in time, the absence of Spencer Dinwiddie is already being felt, it seems, Nick.
Yeah, well, I also don't think Karis LeVert is... He's not necessarily like your truest point guard. You know what I mean? Like, that's not his position.
He doesn't have a true point guard right now, yeah. Nick. They don't.
They had Spencer Dinwiddie, and then obviously Chris Chioza is probably the truest point guard they have on the roster. And obviously, I'm not sure if he's NBA level yet. You know, it's just tough. Like, a lot of things are – it's funny is because we've seen the Nets look so good in certain portions that we've seen them look so bad. So it's just like we can take as much as we can from this, but also things could drastically be different in 5 games. Like, I'm not even sure that Steve Nash knows what his rotations are set for. Like, he's played these same rotations for the last couple games, but – I think there's easy adjustments that he could make.
Yeah, look, I'm just, because, you know, it's hard not to get kind of caught up in the moment initially. And, you know, Karras hasn't necessarily, he's had some good performances, but inefficient performances at the same time. Like, those lofty scoring and assist games came also with, you know, an inefficiency in field goal percentage. So, look, I have no doubt that Karras is going to work his way into it. And I think that everyone is finding their adjustments. And Kevin Durant has had some really good quotes, Nick. And I wanted to bring it to you because we're lucky that, you know, we've got the likes of Alex Schiffer, Brian Lewis, Matt Brooks bringing us some absolute fire with their tweets. Kevin Durant said Jeff Green was telling the team in the locker room post-game that the Nets can't rely on just making shots and need to step up defensively. We got a leader in the locker room in Jeff Green already, Nick.
Yeah, and maybe somebody who should have saw some more minutes tonight, too. I thought he was fine out there. And he's one guy that actually plays defense, and he's pretty versatile, and he can switch on a different guy. So, yeah, Jeff Green knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, look, I think that we see Nash experiment with, like, spurts of lineups with Jeff Green out there. But I think Jeff Green should be the backup, you know, wing position. We saw Prince come out there, and I think Jeff Green can do more without the ball in his hands than Torian Prince can. You know, he just knows he has a greater IQ, greater experience, and greater defensive acumen. So I think Jeff Green, you know, is showing and solidifying himself. And I'm really glad to sort of hear him have his voice. And, you know, his voice matters. His voice is going to resonate in the locker room. You know, if you heard that from DeAndre Jordan, it's just like, well, you need to play some defense, my dude. Why am I listening to you? Whereas Jeff Green is at least showing in the sort of 15 to 18 minute spurts that, like, you know what? All right, I'm out here. I'm fighting through these screens. I'm making the guys shoot over me and shoot through me. So I agree with it. And another one that Kevin Durant sort of brought as well, Nick, is that his opinion on the way Nash handled the timeout today was that he said he didn't have a problem with it, and playing through opposing runs is a test for the Nets' maturity and resolve. I get it for this game, but if it happens again and, you know, you're going up against a team that has, you know, a high offensive outburst, and, you know, Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook get hot, and, you know, that happens again, there has to be a level of adjustment.
Yeah, and I think, like, as a player, you're going to always want your coach to have trust in you. But at the end of the day, like, if it's people not knowing the system or the scheme or what they're supposed to be doing on a communication, you can't correct that because they literally don't know what the correct answer is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not like you're we're not playing football. You can't huddle up and have a discussion. Maybe at free throws you can, like, a little bit, but it's a little bit tougher to correct early in the season as such a new team. And, like, KD and Kyrie, maybe they're used to doing things like that, and maybe even DeAndre, but some of the younger Nets, I feel like they need the timeout.
Yeah, you need the coach to be able to go and see what the players aren't, you know, because then the players, when you're in the heat of battle, you know, it's hard to sort of go, all right, let's step back from this and look at it from a more objective sense, because the adrenaline's pumping, the testosterone's going, you're trying to get stops, the energy's here and there. Sometimes you just need to settle and go, all right, let's just stop for a little bit. And even if it's not like making any adjustments and it's just a reset mentally, let's get a break. Let's get our mind switched back on and get those runs. Let's get a stop here. Let's focus on one possession at a time. You know, I think that these are all adjustments that will be made, and we get, me probably more than a lot of other people on this podcast, more rash in the moment because we do game-by-game podcasts, and we're probably going to say that every time the Nets have a poor performance. But at this point in time, there's some trends, there's some behaviors that are turning worrisome, but it is still very, very early days. And once the Nets have played 20, 25 games, if these are still, these trends are becoming, these behaviors are becoming trends, that's when I'm going to be, all right, Nick, what the hell's going on with the switching? What the hell's going on with the gang rebounding? What's going on with the inefficient shot making and decision making?
I think a lot of it, too, is just the growth of Steve Nash. Like, we're, you know, he is a first-time head coach with literally no coaching experience. Like, is he going to start to maybe feel more comfortable by game 15? Like, I don't know when you start to feel comfortable as a coach, or even if you ever do, or whatever that becomes, because that's, like, another element that we're kind of watching here, too. And, like, he only had two preseason games, so it's just like maybe he doesn't have the full vibe for it, and that was always like a worry going into the season. Like we kind of talked about, Nash has been so great in answering a lot of questions, but there was always that little thing in the back of our minds, like he is a first-time head coach coaching a team with championship expectations.
There's some more good quotes, and somehow Brian Lewis already has an article in the New York Post, one of the only good journalists at that organization. But that's a discussion for another day. This is the full context of Nash on the defense. It's also new. It's a new scheme for our guys. A lot of them are teammates for the first time. I haven't played very much together at all, so both are valid. I also think it's a really short preseason. We've done pretty well defensively up until our last outing. There was slippage. You add it all up to go along with not only Atlanta's ability, but their hot start. And it tore us apart a little bit. I'd say all those things are a factor. It's something we have to build and chip away at all year. Look, he sees things for what they are. That's what I will give him total and absolute credit for.
Yeah, no, I agree. He definitely understands what the issues were. And I feel like he kind of sees, like, hey, it's a good offensive team. If we let them get hot in the first quarter, we pretty much shot ourselves in the foot. And then we still tried to finish the race. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just a tough situation, especially when it's a young team looking to get confidence. Lloyd Pierce, like we talked on the last show, has these guys shooting threes across the board. Like, even players that aren't good three-point shooters are having good nights. So it's a tough offense, and we're not going to be the only team that has issues defending them. Obviously, you hope if we see that we're going to see them probably later in the year that the Nets defend them better.
Yeah, and Joe Harris had an awesome quote as well. He said this on the defense, is just being more disciplined, trusting in the guys behind you. We were in scramble mode on Wednesday where one thing would break down and guys would kind of abandon principles and we were sort of scrambling around for most of the game, honestly. Just cleaning up of the few things there, just trying to be in better position. And again, having a little more faith and trusting the guys behind you and trusting the principles. Feels like Joe's stealing my words because I sort of said, like, you know, the principles are there. It's just that they're not being adhered to fully. And look, I think the Nets, if we put, I know you love to put percentages on it, Nick, so I'll put, I'll throw something at you. I think the Nets are at about, 15-20% of their defensive potential. Do you think that's too low or too high?
Yeah, I think in these last two games, they're probably at like 20%. Yeah, and then like we said, in Boston, they probably were something closer to like 75%, or maybe Boston was having a bad shooting game. But I feel like you see flashes, especially with Kevin Durant's ability, and sometimes when they're in the passing lanes. And even tonight, we saw some nice like point of attack stuff from Caris LeVert and Landry Shamet, who I thought like a lot of the Nets had terrible games, but I thought Landry Shamet was okay defensively. At least he does a pretty good job avoiding screens, where a lot of the other Nets just get locked up.
I saw someone put on Twitter, Nick, that he's not worth the first rounder. What is your response to that?
I mean, I think time will tell. Obviously, you know, you score, what, he scored 1 point tonight or 2 points tonight? Like, you're going to have to put up more numbers than that. The Nets need him to probably give him at least, like, 8 points tonight with Caris LeVert on that bench unit. And I think that's also, like we talked about Caris struggling, is, like, no one is really playing good offense on that bench unit. Maybe Jeff Green, like, Torian Prince had the good game against Atlanta last time. Other than that, he's probably made like three shots on the year. Landry Shamet's been kind of hot or cold. That's where I'd like to see if Steve Nash probably experiment more. Like, if the guys aren't playing well, like, why not go with Bruce Brown? Why not try Tyler Johnson? Why not try Chris Gioza? Why not try Rodion? You know what I mean? Like, if it's not like Torian Prince is this very skilled player that is like a game breaker for the Nets. You know what I mean? It's not like he's some guy that's going to turn into an all-star player. Like, that ship has sailed. So see if these other, make him earn his minutes.
Yeah, I think the gap between, you know, 5 and 11 to 13 in the rotation is not that pronounced. You know, TLC is your fifth starter. The gap between him and Bruce Brown is marginal, or if
Bruce,
I mean,
Brown's probably better in my opinion. That's, look, just based off what I've seen from both guys. So,
and I heard people saying, you know, like, but he's not that good offensively, but it's just like, did you watch the Detroit Pistons last year? Did you watch the game against the Detroit Pistons last year? He has some playmaking ability. He has some defensive chops. He provides energy. Look, it's hopefully this turns into, like, you know, David Nwaba, and he ends up just, you know, finally getting that opportunity, you know, and he relishes it and he really goes out there for it. But again, I could say plenty of things about why isn't Bruce Brown getting minutes other than junk time. You know, Rodion's is fine because I think Jeff Green deserves a large majority of the minutes.
Yeah, give more of Torian Prince's minutes to Jeff Green. I don't even, like, I know a lot of people are so scared about him playing forward minutes and that they think that he should play more center, but, like, have they watched Torian Prince play defense? Like, he'll do just fine.
Yeah, I think if it's Green and KD or Green and Allen out there, both of those guys are quality. Well, Jared Allen is very good defensively, and Jeff Green's good enough to be able to handle guys on the perimeter. It's not like, you know, Cam Reddish is, you know, LeBron James or any of those, or like Kawhi Leonard or Paul George. And even then, who knows? We haven't seen the Brooklyn Nets go up against the likes of those really key offensive wings. And when we have, you know, against Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum, Brooklyn Nets did a decent enough job with Kevin Durant playing some quality defense. I just thought that, yeah, there's a lot of, I think defense is probably the key thing to take out of this. And I think offensive execution and decision making. It just seems like basketball is a really energy-based game. You know, there's flow and you sort of feel that flow. And to sort of change the energy, you know, sometimes you need to do timeouts, which is, you know, on Steve Nash. But it's hard to change it when you're in that funk, especially within the game itself.
Yeah, I think the Nets still need some type of offensive identity. Like, not specific sets they can run because they're so versatile, but there has to be like go-to plays for them to kind of get things back in motion. And if they're going to play such a read and react style, like, there can't be so many ISOs, especially early when things aren't running well. Like, I get it. If you want to end a run, you go to that ISO or you have a good matchup. But even also, like, the Nets, I feel like they're just all over the place offensively. Like, yo, your offense is struggling. Attack Trae Young in every single possession. Like, he's that bad of a defender. He's that bad. Like, he's not good. Bogdanović isn't a good defender either. Like, he's more solid. But even Kevin Huerter, I don't think, is a good defender. Like, the Nets just let the Hawks off the hook offensively so many times. And like, Clint Capella, he played a lot better tonight than he did the game before. But, like, John Collins as a center, he's not a good rim protector. Like, he can hop, and I thought he played some okay defensive stretches, but he's not going to lock down the paint. So the Nets just almost make life too easy for the other team sometimes.
Yeah, they settled. They settled for a lot, and you know, they settled for shots, or they settled, you know, in their mentality a lot. You know, KD's taking pull-ups, and Kyrie's taking pull-ups, and TLC's taking pull-ups. And it's just like, move that ball a little bit, get the energy flowing. And yeah, the Atlanta
Hawks. I saw a possession, Jack, where Kyrie Irving was defended by Cam Reddish, and KD had Trae Young on him, and Kyrie ended up pulling up.
Yeah, and it's, look, there's that read and react, and these guys are smart enough to be able to make those adjustments. But there's a little bit of a gap between the next game now against the Washington Wizards coming up. Watch some film, and hopefully Steve Nash is saying, Kai, you can't do this possession after possession after possession. There's the mismatch there. You've got to be smarter there. Or, you know, we see a lot of the opening game set is obviously set for Joe Harris with, you know, DeAndre setting like a sort of flare screen or some level of off-ball screen. Let's get more than one of those, like, plays per, like, quarter. You know, Joe is an immense three-point shooter, and he's shooting really well this season. He's coming off, what, a 6-of-7 night, or 6-of-11. I can't remember how many he took the other night, and he got 2-of-5 tonight. You know, he's going to shoot 40% or more. Good offense is getting him possessions. Get him more sets.
And then also, I feel like they need to run those same sets for Kyrie and, you know, KD too. You know what I mean? Like, they have so many good players, and that's also another area where they miss Spencer, because he could be the guy initiating the offense and then these guys all running crazy. We'll see what happens on that front. I think there's other guys that can maybe develop into maybe a little bit better ball handlers, or maybe Bruce Brown's a guy that could help with that.
It's Bruce, Nick. It's Bruce. The answer is always Bruce. We come
Bruce
back
Almighty.
It's Bruce Almighty. We come back to it. Bruce. It's Bruce, Nick. It's Bruce.
I'd really be intrigued if what would happen if he went in the starting lineup.
I don't think that you would see as poor an offensive performance as what you got from night from TLC. And what if TLC is like a couple inches taller than Bruce Brown? I think Bruce Brown makes up for it with his aggression. It seems
he's like 30 pounds heavier, I think.
Yeah, and TLC just has he's finding his footing still as an NBA player. Like, he has barely been a starter in his career, and he doesn't have the level of comfort yet. Whereas it feels like to me, Bruce Brown's just like, you know what? I deserve to be playing some minutes here. Give me some starter minutes here, and I'll relish them. So, look, there might be a time where it's just like, you know what? Bradley Beal's coming up. Are you going to trust TLC on Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook? Maybe that's when you give Bruce Brown a go. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that Bruce Brown has been relegated into the depths of the rotation where he's only getting junk time minutes, and I think it's only going to take an injury, and I don't want injuries to happen, but I want Bruce Brown to get some goddamn minutes.
Yeah, just experiment with something different and see if it could help you, especially if you're struggling so much on that end of the floor. And most nights the offense has been fine. And like we said, like, the players around Bruce Brown's level aren't playing lights out where they deserve every single minute that they're getting.
Yeah, yeah.
And like absolutely. We talked about too, is like, I think Bruce Brown maybe could be kind of helpful to Caris LeVert as a secondary ball handler with the second unit if he's not starting, because we've kind of talked about some of the playmaking he has, where it kind of just feels like watching the second unit sometimes. If Caris doesn't create something, like, nothing's going to happen.
Nothing. Yeah, it's very stagnant. It's very just like, man, this is rough. And while the Nets have decent depth, and we know that they're a deep team, but they don't know how to create their own shot. All of the shot creation is in the starting lineup and on Karras. Yeah. You know, I don't want Torian Prince creating for himself. Landry Shamet can do a little bit off the catch, but he
his
can't
dribble
necessarily
handoff stuff is okay, but other than that, like, it's just not really, you know what I mean? He's not going to cross anybody up.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Any other things you wanted to touch on before? I mean, we've pretty dived deep. We've got a lot of the quotes and stuff, Nick, but was there anything else you wanted to touch on? I mean, DeAndre Jordan was DeAndre Jordan again.
Yeah, we didn't even really touch on him. I thought there was a couple of plays where maybe he showed a little bit more effort, but he's just going to have his, you know, limitations all season long. And Jared Allen wasn't as great as he was against Atlanta the other night. I think he just maybe didn't have the same level of juice. Like, I don't think it's unrealistic to say maybe the Nets were a little hungover today. Like, I feel a little hungover doing this podcast. Maybe, you know, words aren't flowing out of my mouth the way they normally do. So maybe that's the same kind of feel for the Nets. It's tough. It's been the holiday season. They had a play on Christmas. They had the game right after New Year's. Let's see what they can do on Sunday, and let's see where they're at in a couple games too. Because like we said, it's such like a growing stretch for this team, because it's so many new pieces across the board, from the coaching to the scheme to the players to the roles of the players.
Yeah, and look, you give them time to figure it out. You give them a certain leeway to be able to figure it out as the players and the coaching staff. But there comes a point in time where you need to put up or shut up. And as each game goes by, that time becomes closer and closer and closer. So, look, there are some things that are just like, all right, we've got KD and Kyrie. They'll bail you out as superstars. Joe Harris is an immense three-point shooter. Jared Allen is becoming one of the best offensive rebounders, if not rebounders, in the league. But you need the other guys chipping in. You know, Torian Prince showing some defense, Landry Shamet hitting those threes, TLC hitting some threes. If you're the fifth star, that's your only job, to hit threes. And, you know, I think that a lot of these guys, it's a mental thing as well. But, yeah, there's plenty of things that I'm sure that might continue to be issues on the next podcast, or there might be some progression there. We certainly hope it is the latter. But DeAndre Jordan, Nick, I know we sort of got through it a little bit, but it's probably worth touching it on again. I don't think I have the energy to give another rant about him, my dude.
Yeah, no, I don't really have enough energy to give another rant. The Nets didn't give us energy tonight, so why should we give them that same energy in return?
Yeah, his performance is, I can't remember who it was, but, you know, he's not playing. He's certainly not a 10. He might be on maybe the worst contract in the league. You know, $10 million for a dude who, you know, is what, you know, Avik Zubac, Jakob Poeltl, these are the sort of guys that you expect on that mid-level exception money. You know, Montrezl Harrell. DeAndre Jordan ain't anywhere in the class of those guys.
Yeah, I don't think he's the worst contract in the league, but he's definitely not a good one, especially at that number and what the Nets still have needs on the roster to kind of fill up. But Jack, anything else on tonight's game?
I think on DJ, Nick, there was like mini glimpses where I'm like, oh, he's got an offensive board. Oh, he slammed it. Oh, there's a block. And then it's just like he follows it up. It's just like he only has the energy and capacity to do it for like once a quarter or once every 4 minutes. And
you
it's
think
just
he's
like,
out of shape?
Look, there's a fair
he looks
question
a little fluffy.
For it. Whether it's like he's out of shape in the offseason, and look, we know he had he experienced COVID, and hopefully there are no lingering effects there. And if there are, I fully you know, that fully makes sense, because we don't know the science behind it yet, and there's a lot of other guys in other sports and even in basketball right now that are feeling those lingering effects. So hopefully that's not the case, and hopefully it's just, you know, a correctable thing where DJ just got to, you know, maybe stay in that beyond meat stuff, but, you know, start doing a few more suicides, because, yeah, he just, or whether it's a, do you think
just
it's more
get a little leaner? Like, if you get old, that's just what happens when you get older. You just get a little bit slower, and he's a big dude. Like, he's huge. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if he dropped 10 pounds, I bet you he'd be, like, moving so much better out there.
Do you think it's more physical or mental, Nick?
I think it's probably a combination of both, but I think if you feel really good physically, it'll help you feel really good mentally. And you know what I mean? Like, you could feel amazing mentally, but if your body can't do what you want it to do, it doesn't matter.
No, know? Look, that's fair. I personally think it's mentally.
Some of it is mental, but like, I think also he's just slow. Like, he's just not as quick as he used to be. You know what I mean? And like, as good as you can be, it's not like he ever was the highest like basketball IQ defender. It's not like he was Marc Gasol. Like, he was a great defender, but he wasn't, like, a lot of it was off his athleticism and recovery speed and his amazing leaping ability and his strength.
Yeah, but, and then, like, he shows, like, these games where he gets, like, a massive block and swats the hell out of it. It's just like, well, it's there, like, and you're not playing, like, 35 minutes a night anymore. So, like, if Steve Nash is like, and he said before the game, he's like, you know what? We like, you know, DJ starting. He's got the good chemistry with KD and Kyrie. Jared Allen's going to play the majority of the minutes. That happened again tonight. He did play more minutes, but, you know, you should be able to for 15 to 20 minutes, and maybe this is rich coming from someone who, you know, isn't an NBA player, but you should be able to show that level of engagement for 80% of those minutes at least. It feels like he shows engagement and execution for like 10%.
1 out of 10 plays.
Yeah, like 2 minutes of the 20 that he plays, or 1.9 minutes of the 19 that he plays.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough thing to deal with. I mean, I'm not really sure what the answer is on DeAndre.
Yeah, hopefully it's
like we're stuck with him.
Yeah. Look, we're KD and Kyrie. Hopefully that they can lift that. And I saw a pretty savage tweet on the timeline earlier today where it's just like, Chris Paul's greatest achievement is making DeAndre Jordan an all-defensive player. And I'm just like, damn, That's true, but savage.
That's almost as bad as the $600 stimulus check being DeAndre and the $2,000 being Jared Allen.
Yep, I posted. I had to figure out to get one of the stimmy little memes out there. And I was like, $600 stimulus was the tonight's game, and the $2,000 was the game the other night. So give him a $2,600, by the way, Donnie and the dickheads in Congress or wherever the hell they are. I'm not sure the American political system. But God damn it. It's been like, what, 9 months and you expect
people
to... It
doesn't work, Jack. There's no question.
Well, we aren't going to turn into a political podcast, but I will say that politics in today's day and age, especially in America, leaves a lot to be desired. But one thing that doesn't leave a lot to be desired, Nick, is while Kyrie Irving had a poor performance tonight, he continues to be a giver, a nurturer, and a leader off the court. And do you want me to go through the list of things that he did in his the Kyrie Irving Foundation's 11 Days of Giving?
Yes, it's pretty amazing stuff. And, like, really no one has talked about it.
No, and look, Brandon Scoopy Robinson was awesome. Shams had a really good tweet. But to fully understand the breadth of it, you know, Nets Daily posted an article, but also to hear it, hear all of these things that he did. Okay, bear with me. Donated school supplies to 25 teenage girls in Kenya, Africa. Donated 100 book bags to kids in Newark, New Jersey. Donated money to mums of Black Boys United for Social Change in Brooklyn, New York. Okay, that's one tweet. An activation in Japan and China called the Kyrie 7 Experience. Donation of 300 art bags to Cool Cat Newark, a preschool art program in Newark, New Jersey. Donation of PPE to Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. I'm assuming that's a Native American tribe. Yeah. Funding a family of four in the Bronx, New York, who moved out of a shelter into permanent housing. Donating funds to Christine's Kitchen Food Pantry and Soup Kitchen in West Orange, New Jersey. A donation of soil to the Greater Newark Conservancy in Newark, New Jersey. Paying off the tuition of 9 students at Lincoln University, which is the one that Shams tweeted out. Distributing presents to 80 children in the Bronx. And distributing presents to 100 children in Queens. Don't lose sight of, like, we don't expect, you know, to... these people aren't like, you know, it's hard to sort of fathom, like, he's done so much, Nick, and he gets little to no credit for it. And that, to me, what he is as a person compared to, like, these pawns comments or whatever, yeah, it's annoying or whatever, but this, your actions in the community
speak louder than your words.
Speak louder than your words and speak louder than, you know, saying something dumb about Brian Windhorst and the ESPN or whatever. This is what truly matters. What you're doing to help and impact the world around you. And Kyrie, he does so much. He does so much. And a lot of and so many other basketballers do that as well. And they probably do it behind the scenes. And Kyrie Irving has done it behind the scenes. And maybe he's got some people that are chatting to Scoop B. But this is awesome. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. And, you know, in a tough time of year where a lot of people are struggling in today's day and age, Nick. So I think that his impact here is even more pronounced.
Yeah, 100%, especially during the pandemic, he easily could just keep his money for himself. Like, he has no need to donate. It's not like it's a requirement. And obviously he did all this stuff. And then I feel like everyone always forgets that how much money he, like, donated to the WNBA players that wanted a decision to play in the bubble or not. So he's constantly doing good things off the court. Does maybe he have some different perspectives on life? Sure. Does he say some strange things? Sure. But, like, at the end of the day, he's still doing good in helping humans. You know what I mean? Like, he's still doing the right thing on a regular basis. All the other stuff, it might be annoying, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this podcast doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. We're a basketball podcast that talk about something minute and insignificant in the grand scheme of things. All those lists of things that Kyrie Irving did, that is what is of true significance to today's day and age. Helping others, you know, that's what we're put on this earth to do. You know, if we're not providing something, like, and that's why sometimes we do this podcast, because we feel, you know, the amount of gratitude that we've gotten lately from listeners and people has been overwhelming in some respects. It's just like, you know, we're just two dudes who just talk about a basketball team. You know, we're not doing that much in the grand scheme of things. And if we had the means to do more, I guarantee you we would. And we really want to. And this is just a small part of it. But, you know, shout out to Kyrie Irving, the Kyrie Foundation, and everyone who is doing awesome work behind the scenes and in the community and beyond. And it feels like to me that Kyrie Irving feels like New York, Newark, New Jersey, all the surrounding suburbs and counties. You know, he's really making an impact there. And there's a lot of love that deserves to be shown to that.
Yeah, 100%. And like, it just kind of sets the tone too for the rest of the team. And from a leadership perspective, you know, even if he's not doing other things, like, wow, this guy is still a great person off the court. So I think that's a great note to end the show. And like we said earlier, Happy New Year to all of our listeners. And like Jack mentioned, some of the comments we received about the podcast have just been awesome, and we appreciate it. Appreciate everybody listening to us from 2020 to the years before. And 2021, we'll be dropping plenty of content. Hopefully the Nets are playing better than tonight, though.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.